Inside Security Podcast with Martin and Steve Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there and sparkles while the vet's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
It's episode 174 of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about doing threat intelligence smartly. My name is Martin Fisher. We're glad you could join us. We have an almost full crew here tonight. Joining me on the other side of the interwebs is my good friend Andy Willingham. Andy, how deep is the snow?
It's not that bad. There's only about, I don't know, maybe 6 inches. Some of it's old, some of it's new. We hit above freezing today for the first time in like 2 weeks. So
life is good.
It's getting there.
Also joining us is our obligatory news Yankee, Steve Reagan. Steve, Indianapolis, Snowmageddon or Icemageddon?
Well, apparently we've got it like it's Central Florida compared to Andy. I mean, we're above freezing, maybe got an inch on the ground, if that. It's just wet here. Wow. I don't know how that storm missed us and hit you. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's definitely odd.
And kind of rounding us out, I think Joseph Zaccoli in the greater metro Baltimore area, where I understand he was out in a tank top and shorts walking the cat today. So how's it going, man?
It's excellent. It was more of ice skating along with the cat. She's got that pause attraction control, but I don't.
Really? Really? Really?
Yeah, he worked hard for that one, y'all. Unfortunately, Yvette is not with us tonight, but let's go ahead and, guys, let's just dive right into this. A lot of attention around threat intelligence over the last, three, 4 weeks. A lot of the, you know, it's been a big topic for a couple of years at RSA, various conferences. You can't swing a dead cat without hitting some sort of press release about a new product here or a new feed there. Threat intelligence is sort of like cloud and APT all rolled into one. And I think, a couple of 3 weeks ago when Norse imploded, following a Krebs article, and, you know, Steve, you did a lot of coverage on that as well. A lot of folks think that when you talk about threat intelligence, you're talking about Norse, and that's just not the case. One of the things that's interesting in the post-Norse threat intelligence world is digital shadows. Raised $14 million in Series B funding from investors who have a track record of making smart choices. So, you know, Steve, I know that you've talked a little bit with the folks over at Digital Shadows. Why don't you tell us a little bit about them and how you think they kind of – this transaction, you know, potentially impacts that industry?
So – full disclosure, I've been researching threat intelligence companies now for a couple of weeks, and Digital Shadows was one of them. They've been really helpful and helped me out. But this kind of funding, it's no laughing matter. I mean, $14 million is a whole lot of money, and it's coming from Paladin Capital Group, 1011 Ventures. You know, these are places that know what they're doing when it comes to investments. And I think that means really good things, not just for Digital Shadows, but for all of their customers as well. The thing is, if you're not familiar, Digital Shadows isn't the type of threat intelligence that you think it is. It's more of like automated OSINT. What they do is they go out and they scour the web, like Pastebins, Carter forums, you know, like the darknet websites and things like that, and they take that data the criminals are talking about and looking for and everything like that, and then they compare it to your data. And what happens is they're able to tell you, like, hey, you've had, you know, your user databases on the web, people are looking to target you, things like this. And it's very helpful focused intelligence, and that's kind of impressive. But from everything I've seen so far, it's a really good company, at least a good solid foundation to build on. And $14 million is going to help.
Yeah, but it seems to me that the Digital Shadows, and I'm going to apologize for using this little term here, their value proposition isn't the same as a lot of the other threat intelligence companies we're seeing. Is that it's not just feeds, right? And, you know, a lot of companies now are on the bad end of this, are essentially repackaging old products that were feeds and signatures and calling it threat intelligence.
Yep. And it's very sad, but that's exactly what's happening. And a lot of times what's missing from these repackaged feeds or raw data streams is context.
Exactly. I mean, it's almost like a denial of service attack on your SOC. I mean, you can point 1 terabyte of data at your SOC, and if it's just raw data without meaning, without context, you've now got to spend a whole lot of time sifting through to find that needle in the haystack. And that's not easy. If you look, and we're not actually going article by article, but there's a series of articles that we've linked to in the show notes. One of them talks about a deck from the RSA conference in 2015. It's a presentation, threat intelligence is like 3-day potty training. And basically what it's talking about is a threat intelligence maturity model. Net of it is threat intelligence programs are really hard to do, and they take years to get it right. If you think about it, if you're getting all this data about what's happening on the outside, but you don't know what's happening on your own inside, you're simply listening to a broadcast. You're never going to be able to correlate that outside threat actor to the potential vulnerability that you have on the inside. And speaking from experience, you know, good vulnerability management, good asset management programs, and you know, then tying that into some sort of SIM or some other correlation engine, not a lot of companies do that extremely well, at least in my experience. You know, Andy, I know you've been around the block a couple times. This is hard.
Yeah, it's real hard. And, you know, I think we've touched on this sometime in the past is, you know, like I say, you get flooded with stuff. And even if the company does a reasonable job of pulling it all together, there's still so much that they send to you that is not relevant to you. And you still have to sort through all of that and figure out, you know, what is it that's going to impact us? You know, what are the pieces that I need? And then you got to know what to do with that once you have it. And I'll be honest with you, I have not followed threat intelligence space in depth in the last, you know, little while, just due to, you know, my responsibilities at work and other things. And, you know, so I'm not aware of a company that really does do a decent job at it.
And I think that's I think the key. I mean, I was having a conversation with Jerry Bell from the Defensive Security Podcast on the Twitters before we started recording. And the end of the conversation comes down to really only large enterprises, I think, will ever be able to do threat intelligence effectively, because the investment that you have to make is really, really large. You've subscribed to these data feeds. You've got to hire some really smart people who can build your program up and start consuming the feeds, start creating context, use the threat modeling, right? You're doing threat modeling, right? And tying those threats to your threat models and figuring out what you need to do. My best guess is that even if you hired a crackerjack set of folks and invested in the technology, you're talking 24, 36, 48 months before you'd be able to be at that level to where you could be really confident that the intelligence product being generated by your threat intel group, that you could be reasonably confident and take action on it on a regular basis. You know, Steve, I know you, again, with your research and all that you've thought about this, what do you think?
I think a lot of the problems companies are running into is they're sold on the set it and forget it mentality of threat intelligence. And like you were saying, that's just not the case. I mean, there's no guarantee. You can't implement, you know, your data feeds or anything like that with or without context and expect anything to work from day one or day 300. A lot of times what's going to happen is, even if you have the best threat intelligence in the world with all the context and all the validation you could ever want, there's still no guarantee that the intelligence you're getting is going to actually be relevant to your organization. And that seems to be a roadblock for a lot of companies. They don't understand why that is, because that's not what they thought they were buying. They thought that they would get answers immediately, and it's just not, it's not feasible, because no two companies are alike. You can't expect a data feed talking about CryptoLocker to apply to you if you don't understand what CryptoLocker is and what kind of data you need to protect it from. That's another hurdle companies have, is they lack a lot of the basics. They don't have asset tracking. They don't have, you know, a general idea of what threats they face on a regular basis versus those one-off threats that could do serious damage if it happens to hit. And that's where intelligence comes into play. You know, when you get proper context and it's validated, it should be able to enable behavioral changes at the organization. So what I mean by that is, you know, good threat intelligence is going to change how your SOC prioritizes things. It's going to change how they respond to alerts, or how, you know, business makers or executives invest in security programs or prioritize long-term security projects, things like that. And on the lower end of that scale, good threat intelligence will help your incident response teams react faster in a given situation.
And I think that's all exactly right. So if you're listening and you've been really hoping that we're going to tell you how in four easy steps you can have an effective threat intelligence, I think what we're telling you is that's not really doable. It takes a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of organizational maturity. So what we're also not saying is that, you know, threat intelligence is not something that's just inside of the security community. CIOs, CEOs, members of the board of directors are getting exposed to this threat intelligence or cyber threat intelligence or whatever constantly, and not just from sales, you know, proposals or whatever. They're watching shows, and it kills me to say this, but things like CSI Cyber or Scorpion or what have you, where they're throwing out these phrases and they're using computers, that's really easy to surf the dark web and find. And we as security professionals, we want to just cry when we see this.
So I want to kind of step back for a second, because we're a couple of minutes into this discussion, and I think that we've overlooked something kind of important. And Ron W. actually brought it up on Twitter. One of you guys define threat intelligence, or more interesting, each of you guys define threat intelligence. And let's see if everybody have the same definition there?
Yeah. So to me, threat intelligence is a business capability that analyzes internal and external data to provide inputs to the organization that enable it to take action.
It's about like mine. Threat intelligence is going to help you develop tactics to address existing threats or plan for future threats. It's a data set surrounding various threats and the context needed to understand them.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add to that is the aspect of it is, once you have it, you've got to have the people that can take it and make real world, you know, decisions for your company. So, you know, threat intelligence without the internal resources to do the right things with it is not going to serve you at all.
Right. And that's why I was very specific about using the word capability. It's not a product. It's not a service. It's a, you know, it's part of your service catalog, right? If you're an ITIL shop, it's something that you do. It's not something that you get. It's not something that you watch. It's something that you do. And I think that's the key thing that so much of the marketing around threat intelligence, you know, gets wrong. I mean, for so long we've seen, you know, what a lot of folks affectionately call the pew-pew maps, right? And we've said that's threat intelligence. That's telling us where the attacks are coming from and where they're going. And I suppose for some value of the phrase threat intelligence, that's true. But, you know, if I'm sitting at my desk and I'm watching a pew-pew map go on and I see attacks leaving, you know, Beijing, China and impacting London, England, does that really impact me? No, the little explosion graph that looks really cool, right? But it's other than being eye candy, and that's kind of what I was getting into as far as, you know, these expectations outside the security community around threat intelligence, the eye candy is one of the reasons I think we're being pressed into doing something about it. Executives love sexy data visualizations. I think more security products have been sold because they can do cool visualizations than almost any other feature you can find. And the threat intelligence vendors realize that, and a lot of them, a lot of their, you know, their subscription-based stuff is built around, we're going to give you access to this data set, and more importantly, we're going to give you access to the URL that enables you to have this, you know, really sexy map on a big screen in your sock, so that when the executives walk through, you can point to, this is what we're protecting you against, right? Which is completely false, but it's part of the way the game is played. And that's the challenge I think we as information security leaders face, is we're told by people above us, we need to get some of that cyber threat intelligence. And then we need to figure out, what do we do with that demand? Because turning around and saying, well, I'm going to need to spend $4 million a year for the next 4 years before we get anything, is a great way to find yourself promoted to customer, right? Andy's been there. You can tell by the laugh.
Well, you know, and I think you're hitting on the right thing here, is that too many times companies that they don't understand threat intelligence. The CIO doesn't understand it. You know, they've heard about it. They think it's a great thing. And then some slick sales guy comes in and starts talking about how amazing their product is and all the information that it can give you. And then, of course, you know, they tell you that, you know, they're going to, you know, have a consultant on site for, you know, for X number of thousands of dollars to get you up and running. And they're going to train your guys, but then they walk off and your guys, they're trained. But if your guys don't have the right mindset, it's not going to do you a whole lot of good, because they're going to be hit with all this data. And if they don't have an analyst style mindset, you know, they're not going to understand what to do. They're not going to understand what really is important to them. You know, they're not going to understand how to react and respond and what to escalate and what to, you know, just set aside as noise, just based upon, you know, a week boot camp style training.
Or even more insidiously, let's say that you say, we're going to do the threat intelligence thing. We're going to send a guy off to training and he's going to get back. And now he's, you know, you've got to choose. Does your guy put new firewall rules in to support, you know, connectivity for a new customer or a new partner, or do they spend that time doing threat intelligence work? We all know what they're going to do, right? And you know, from one of the things, you know, as an Army officer and hanging around with some of the intelligence guys, intelligence knowledge, intelligence abilities are highly perishable. If you're not consistently using them, those staff members lose so much capability. So you really want a dedicated, if you're going to do this and do it right, you're going to want a dedicated set of folks to where you can turn to your analyst and ask her, hey, you know, daily briefing, what's going on? And you're getting consistent daily, you know, information versus, you know, going to your firewall guy who also is your cyber threat analyst. It just frustrates me, because I think that's what the vast majority of people are doing, is they're doing cyber threat intelligence because somebody wants them to, or it sounds sexy, or that's how they manage to justify their budget, and they're just wasting money.
But that's where the problem comes in, Mark. When that type of scenario started to show up in the threat intelligence sales cycle, like, listen, I don't have the manpower or the staffing to support this type of dual role or anything like that. The companies came up with this great new trick, automation. And they sell automation as if it's the golden ticket to Willy Wonka's, you know, bulletproof security factory. And the problem is that automation is often worse than the dual role analyst.
Absolutely.
And I have talked just this week, I have six different practitioners I've talked to with four different threat intelligence vendors. and these are all their customers. They don't know that they've been talking to me. But one thing was consistent among all of them. They all have products that have automation abilities. Not a one of them use it. And the reasoning is simple, and it's the same across the board. They're afraid if they automate detection and mediation, it's going to break something in production and stop the business. It's exactly. going to break something it shouldn't.
That's why so many IDSs never went into IPS mode, because we didn't have confidence in a lot of times justified, we didn't have a lot of confidence in the automation. Threat intelligence is hard. I actually think good threat intel is actually harder than actually just doing a SIM, right?
Oh, yeah.
And let's face it, you know, one of the statistics I read, and I'll have to find it somewhere, is, you know, 60 to 80% of all SIM deployments fail because organizations lack the maturity to actually do them. Well, if it's 60 to 80% of SIMs fail, you've got to figure that 80 to 90% of threat intelligence attempts fail to actually do anything other than generate pew-pew maps.
Yeah, actually, one particular threat intelligence vendor, I won't name, but I saw a report. It's a list of alerts that were generated for the SOC. And there were four different phishing emails that came in, okay? Pretty much across the board, they all looked the same. One of them was a generic phishing email for a Chase Bank login. Another was, your UPS thing has been misdelivered. Click here to figure out where your package went. And it's all generic across the board. But the one key thing the analyst hit on that the intelligence vendor didn't was the return address was spoofed to look like it came from the head of shipping. So out of those four, the only one that actually was relevant to the organization was the UPS shipping phishing email. And that was because it was spoofed to look like it came from the person that's in charge. Now, unless your program's been tuned and the product itself is looking for things like that, it took a human being to recognize that. Automating those processes might have allowed that through because it passed a name check.
Right.
And that's what scared them the most. If they'd automated it, that email might have made it through because it would have been part of a whitelisted name.
And that's why I think, you know, I'm in the midst of a SIM deployment right now. We're deploying ArcSight. And I think we're doing it pretty well. We've got a good partner we're working with. We're adding content every week. We're adding more use cases. We're adding more content. But I'm a year in, and I'm still at the point where we're moving out of crawl into walk, right? And it's probably going to be a couple more years before we're going from walk into run. And again, that's easier than a good threat intel program and probably less expensive because the people I need to do a SIM well, they're not cheap, but they're out there. People who can really do threat intelligence and really do it well are extremely rare. And industries like financial services, damn you, Andy, keep hiring stupid amounts of money.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing I was thinking as we're talking about this is we have an amazing threat intelligence group at the office. I mean, the stuff that these guys put out, you know, is just mind boggling. You know, and it's very valuable stuff too. I mean, you know, obviously not all of it's going to apply to me because of the size of our organization. Different things are going to apply to different groups within the organization. But some of the stuff that they give us, you know, it's just like, wow.
Right. And Andy works for one of the largest banks in the world. So you can imagine what their total budget looks like and the fact they can attract people who used to work for three-letter agencies to come in and get these programs up and running. So if that's what it takes, you know, I'm looking at the hospital I work for. Can I realistically spend that kind of money and create that kind of capability? You know, do the magic eight ball, signs aren't good. But I'm not saying these feeds and these tools and this automation have no value. I'm not saying that. I'm saying is you need to be realistic about the value they're going to generate, and you need to be honest with yourself about the capability you and your team have and spend your money wisely.
And that's a good summation point. A lot of times, and this has been consistent amongst everybody I've talked to the last couple of weeks, some of the best threat intelligence you're going to get already lives on your own network.
Yes.
And I'm talking about your lessons learned. incidents, the type of phishing emails you're receiving.
Threat modeling.
The incident response reports that are generated from every time that you've ever had something happen or bad that goes wrong. You know, when you look at all of this stuff and try to make a bigger picture out of it, you get a really solid general sense of what's being attacked, how it's being attacked, why it's being attacked. You'll be able to spot the difference between a one-off incident and a trend. And it's the trend you really want to worry about. The one-off incident you can deal with as it happens. The trends, though, you can plan for, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Guys, it was a fantastic conversation, but we've used up all of our time for the evening. I hope for those of you who were listening, hoping to hear the how do you do it. I'm hopefully didn't break too many hearts, but we figure we might as well tell you the truth and move on from there. So,
well, Martin, real quick, the three or four steps to how you do it: you find a good provider, you hire good people, and you be patient.
So, on behalf of Andy Willingham, Steve Reagan, and Joseph Scully, and the ever lovely but sadly absent Yvette Johnson, my name is Martin Fisher. We're glad you could join us. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. And the voting ends like in 2 hours, so people aren't going to see, you'll be able to do anything. But we were nominated for Best Security Podcast for the Security Blogger Awards. Those of you who voted for us, thank you very much. We will see if we are going to be a bride instead of a bridesmaid again. I know where my bet is. And we'll see y'all in a couple weeks. Thanks very much. Take care.
Night, everybody.
Good night, y'all.